And good morning. You are listening to People Rise Up on your non-commercial community radio station, KBOO, in Portland, Oregon, USA, online at kboo.fm. My name is Andrew Geller, and this morning I finally get to do a program that I've been wanting to do since this summer, and it's the quirks of personal schedules on multiple ends that make it happen today, as opposed to back then. I am very pleased to welcome back to the program Guy Caron. He is a campaigner with the Council of Canadians. Welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
And what we're going to be talking about this morning is sort of an expansion of the North American Free Trade Agreement, but not exactly in that same context or process. We're going to be talking about deep integration, or North American regional integration. Basically, the idea is that business elites, primarily led by, in the United States, the Council on Foreign Relations, and in Mexico, the Mexican Council on Foreign Relations, and in Canada, the Canadian Council of Chief Executives, have been talking for the past 18 months officially regarding the idea of creating sort of a unified North America in many different aspects of society and daily life. So given this kind of really broad general concept, Guy, can you tell us a little bit more about what's been happening, and why is there a need to further and more deeply integrate these three countries?
Well, I can certainly speak of the efforts of the Canadian Council of Chief Executives, and those efforts actually date back to 1998-99. You will remember that NAFTA was implemented in 1994. And after a few years, the Canadian Council of Chief Executives actually started to attempt furthering the reach of NAFTA with some sectoral agreements. In Canada, as probably in the United States as well, these efforts were not going very far simply because most people were content with NAFTA, with what it was doing, and nobody really wanted to reopen it or maybe risk having to reopen it and debate it again. So all these efforts actually went nowhere until September 11. And at that point, obviously with all the changes it created both in the United States and in Canada, and especially the efforts of Canada to try to respond to U.S. demands in terms of security, in terms of defense, and also in light of the fear of Canadian business to see once again the border between both countries being closed, the government of Canada started to be more responsive to what the Canadian Council of Chief Executives was promoting. And that's how we can see those ideas actually gaining weight and be at least talked about, if not implemented, through initiatives such as the North American Security and Prosperity Partnership, which was concluded after the meeting of the three leaders in Waco, Texas, back in March 2005.
You folks have been looking at this issue for quite some time and conducted a whole series of public forums across Canada from, I guess it was last November through this March, 10 different cities, each addressing a different topic. And before we get to details about those hearings, I want to talk about some of the specific areas that the Task Force on the Future of North America looked at. Now, this task force is the sort of informal research group of the three national co-sponsors, the Council on Foreign Relations, Mexican Council on Foreign Relations, and the Canadian CEO group. Do you know how many meetings that they've had? Because you folks have minutes of leaked minutes from the Toronto meeting, and they reference a meeting in Monterey So at least there's been two of these meetings. Do you know how many more there have been?
No, there's been, in fact, three meetings. Okay. The Toronto meeting was actually the first one back in October of 2004. Okay. It was followed in December by a meeting in New York City. And the last meeting was the Monterrey meeting in Mexico in February of 2005. Okay. So following these three meetings, of which we were able to obtain a leaked copy of the minutes of the first one, the task force itself, composed of the three groups, actually presented its recommendations not once but twice. The first time in March, and this is no coincidence, it was in the week before the meeting of the three leaders in Waco, Texas, mm-hmm. and the full report itself was released in May, in which many recommendations were made by the 40 or so people who were members of this committee, of which in which you could find former politicians, politicians that are really were really interested in integrating all three countries more, and who dream of having a North America that will be all working together for security, for defense, on trade, and so on. Their recommendations were actually far-reaching, to the point where you wouldn't have something like Europe, where you have individual countries basically compromising to get what they want and to form this economic union, but where you would basically have a North America that would be really at the image of the United States, in which Mexico and Canada, if they wanted to join, would have to basically change the fabric of the societies to comply with this vision of a continent.
Right, and despite the public pronouncements of the task force in that, you know, oh, this is all going to be fair between all three countries, really what they're talking about in their minutes is, as you say, Canada and Mexico harmonizing their regulations to what the U.S. has. It's not put exactly that way, but in practicality, that's realistically how it would play out. Now, from the leaked minutes from the October 2004 Toronto meeting of the task force, I just want to share a little bit from the scope and vision section, and then we can get into the specific topic areas of security, economy, culture, which it was said they weren't talking about, and other things. So from the scope and vision section of the minutes, it says, economic integration is so advanced that any return to the status quo ante would be extremely costly to all three nations. Integration is needed on a number of fronts and could provide significant additional benefits. Delays would thus entail significant costs. Several obstacles remain. No item, referencing Canadian water or maybe Mexican oil, is off the table. Nothing is off the table. Rather, quote, contentious or intractable issues will simply require more time to ripen politically. It additionally notes that one crucial challenge would be to, and this is building on the experience of NAFTA, I imagine, one crucial challenge would be to provide concrete benefits for ordinary people in all three countries. Now, the last thing that I want to reference from the scope and vision concept is something you already touched on, and that's the idea of developing a North American, quote, brand name. And this would be to distinguish the region from the rest of the world. Now, when I read this, I went, huh, well, North America is a continent. It's kind of geographically distinct from the rest of the world. Why doesn't the concept of it being its own continent, geographically distinct, distinguish it? I didn't really understand that.
I would believe that this specific part was actually addressed more to Mexico and Canada than the United States. Okay. And it aims at, and once again, I'm speculating, but in my mind, it aims at addressing the nationalisms in both countries. In Canada, we are, in many instances, defining ourselves as not being Americans. It happens very often. But I think it's more of a reflection that, Canada and the United States have developed in different manners. In the United States, there was a culture of individualism, freedom, and basically the American dream. While in Canada, for various reasons, many people have chosen to go more the collectivist route in the sense that people were helping each other. There was a sense that group or collectivity, community rights have developed along individual rights in Canada. And to develop this brand of North America is actually an attempt at reneging on this development in Canada and basically uniformizing or harmonizing the way that we are perceiving policies, regulations, directions that are being followed by all three countries together. So the reason why there is a need in the mind of the task force to have a brand North America is basically to delete any individual development that Canada or Mexico might have experienced in the past.
Now, it's interesting also that at the very tail end of the scope and vision section of the Toronto Minutes, it says, quote, North America could serve as a model toward which other countries in the region might aspire, particularly if negotiations toward a free trade area of the Americas should break down. So it's fairly apparent that when things fail, new versions of it resurface. But here it seems like there's multiple parallel tracks of negotiation to kind of secure the same goals somewhat. Just working in tandem, which I think is a kind of interesting dynamic, and they're fully aware that the FTAA may break down. Let's dive a little bit into some of the specific areas that the task force has referred to, and I suppose one of the most, possibly the most significant, is the issue of security. And the task force is well aware that Canada and Mexico, and in my opinion, rightfully so, should be really, really concerned about tying their own internal national security to the actions of the United States government. Tell us a little bit about what the task force is talking about in terms of trilateralizing security between Canada, U.S., and Mexico.
Well, it goes back to the notion that appeared shortly after September 11 of having a fortress North America, basically meaning that there would be an attempt at minimizing the impact of the internal borders between the three countries so that the border between Canada and the United States or the United States and Mexico will be a lot less important if we can actually work together to maximize the security at our external borders. So we're talking about the borders of Canada, the U.S., and Mexico all together vis-a-vis the world. And that's the concept that came, as I said, shortly after September 11. But once again, There's no real Canadian or Mexican flavor to it. It's all the initiatives that are suggested or the initiatives that are actually implemented are the initiatives coming from the United States government. And obviously it's understandable just because the United States have been the place where the terrorist attacks have taken place. And it's also due to the sheer demographic, military, and economic importance of the United States over the other two countries. But it's still Canada and Mexico really in this framework don't really have the opportunity or don't really have the leisure to implement their own security system, their own security measures as they see fit. They really have to follow a blueprint that's basically written by the Department of Homeland Security in the United States. And that's obviously a big problem if, as it relates to the question or the issue of sovereignty. I'll give you one example of where it might actually lead to to some problems, especially in Canada. You might remember that after September 11, there were some cries coming out of Congress in the United States that Canada was a haven for terrorists and that the terrorists who attacked the World Trade Center and the Pentagon basically were coming to the United States from Canada. So there was a call to make the refugee system or the immigration system in Canada more stringent. The terrorists actually didn't come from Canada, and after analyzing both the Canadian refugee system and the U.S. refugee system and both immigration systems, the Canadian system was actually in some ways and some important ways actually more efficient at screening out the undesirable people as the U.S. system. Regardless of this, Canada was actually forced to modify its laws regarding immigrants and refugees to get them closer to what the U.S. statutes and acts are stating. So in that sense, Canada and Mexico, to a lesser extent, are harmonizing their policies, not according to what is working best, but really to what will be pleasing the American Congress and the American government.
You're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO in Portland, Oregon. My guest today is Guy Caron. He is a campaigner with the Council of Canadians, and we are discussing the concept of North American regional integration. You can find out more about this topic on their website, www.canadiansplural.org, and you want to click on the Canada-U.S. Relations area. The People Rise Up website, available at kboo.fm, has links to them as well as many other related materials on this topic. And we're currently discussing some of the leaked minutes from the Task Force on the Future of North America, the October 2004 Toronto meeting, specifically regarding security. And I want to just touch a little bit more on security, and maybe we can touch on the economy just a little bit, and then we'll have to jump to the meetings that you folks held over the past 6 months and have released a report, and there's also a book out about this topic as well. Now, Canada and the U.S. obviously have a longer cooperative military history than the U.S. and Mexico. Canada is part of the North American Aerospace Defense Command, also known as NORAD. And just because of the longer history between the two, there's just more history there. Some of the suggestions that the task force is making, some of them do make a certain amount of sense. But then some of them are the U.S. saying, these are our laws. And because we have borders with you, we think these should be your laws also. The idea of a North American passport is one of those where I think there would be a whole lot more resistance. And then there's the issue of trilateralizing customs and immigration, a little bit of what you were discussing there. But in the context of maybe, fighting terrorism to the extent it's a real threat, it might make sense for all countries to know, say, the names of possible suspected terrorists that the other countries have. Or uniformity of procedure should, in fact, one of the countries encounter said person. Anything else you'd like to add regarding the security aspect of their talks?
Well, as to what you were just mentioning, I mean, there is obviously some collaboration going on between Canadian forces and the U.S. forces. And that's desirable as it relates to the defense of the continent. Mm-hmm. If you're looking, for example, after what happened with September 11, the Canadian armed forces actually mobilized to come and help or to bring any help or give any help that would be required in those circumstances. The Canadian government, with the agreement of the Canadian population, it was a highly popular move, actually fought alongside the United States in Afghanistan to try to hunt Osama bin Laden. Where it actually creates a problem is in other endeavors, and I'm relating, I'm talking here specifically about the war in Iraq, which was not seen in Canada as being part of the war against terrorism, but mm-hmm. had other rational or other purposes. And the war in Iraq and Canada was very extremely unpopular to the point where even if our prime minister at the time really wanted to fight alongside the United States, politically he just couldn't do it. And that's where it creates some problems. I mean, both our armed forces can actually work to some extent on the defense side to defend the continent. But does that mean that disintegration of both armed forces should actually be extended to interventions that are happening overseas, for example? And that's a question that hasn't really been discussed or tackled in any sense. for this task force, the answer is clear. We should. But I would tell you that the majority of the Canadian population will be really opposed to this. It also creates a specific problem with initiatives such as the Ballistic Missile Defense Program, which obviously the U.S. administration is going forward to, is currently testing and developing. While this project is, once again, highly unpopular in Canada, and once again, our government wanted to go along and cooperate on this scheme. On the other side, the population, by a large margin, didn't want to be associated with it. So once again, the Canadian government had to, for political reason, respect that popular will, which was expressed over a year, year and a half prior to the decision being made. But it creates problems because NORAD, where you just mentioned that we have a collaboration, is actually collaborating with the Ballistic Missile Defense Program by providing data and information it gathers. Mm-hmm. So it's a really, really, really complex question that we certainly won't be able to discuss fully today, but it just highlights, I believe, the complexity and the gray areas that this collaboration is facing and might be facing in the future.
And in the interest of time, we're actually going to have to skip the economic aspect of this, crucial though it is to the discussion. People interested in reading more about it can find materials at both the Council of Canadians website and the People Rise Up website. But I want to talk about the series of meetings you folks sponsored over the course of 6 months, late last year, early this year. You produced a report not terribly long ago called Crossing the Line, a Citizen's Inquiry on Canada-U.S. Relations. Can you tell us why this was done, how it was done, and what are the key findings that came out of it?
We have observed this push towards deep integration happening in the last 2 or 3 years, so specifically after the events of September 11. And we also realized that the last meaningful consultation the federal government did with its citizens on the issue of where do we want our relationship to go with the United States took place in the early 80s, which actually recommended starting negotiations for a free trade agreement. Seeing that there has been no meaningful consultation for the last 25 years, we decided to actually go out and organize those public hearings where we would be hearing from citizens on a variety of issues as it relates to Canada-U.S. relations. So we discussed many, many of those issues. Defense and security was one of them. The immigration, refugees, energy, agriculture, healthcare, and we also tackled economics. Economics is actually interesting, and I might be able to answer your question very quickly. When we're talking about NAFTA and the successes of NAFTA, and people are just saying how great NAFTA has been for both countries, or even for all three countries, it might have been so for exports, and might have been so for growth in GDP and productivity, but for citizens like you, me, it actually hasn't been that successful. Just looking at the wage front, wages, even though we've experienced economic growth of over 25% since NAFTA was signed, wages, taking into account inflation, have stagnated since 1992. So that wealth is actually going somewhere, and it's not in the pockets of the middle class. And that's something that we actually found out through one of the elements that we found out through our public consultation. It's data like this that we learned about, and people really just giving advice as to where the federal government should take the relationship with the United States. One thing that was interesting is that in Canada, in many instances, those who are opposing the current direction of that relationship, especially with the U.S. administration, are often labeled as anti-Americans, but many, if not most, if not all, of the people who actually testified at the hearings actually made clear the distinction between Americans, the American public, and the U.S. administration, making sure that the opinions of one doesn't necessarily equal the opinions of the other.
Now, we just got a few minutes left here, so I'm curious what you could tell the listeners regarding opposition in the U.S. or Mexico to this. A couple names of groups maybe folks can take a look at materials from, And how is it that you folks are going forward? I mean, you've got some of the same problem up there as we do down here in that we can produce the greatest looking reports with really solid information and the government can just go, meh. So how do you get them to listen also?
Well, looking at what happened in the examples we just stated, such as Canadian participation in the war in Iraq or participation in the missile defense program, at least I can speak for Canada, the federal government here, the Canadian government, won't go forward for a decision that proves to be highly unpopular. And it's going to be unpopular. If it's unpopular for them, it will be unpopular for them at the poll after, especially in the context here in Canada where in a parliamentary system, the government is in a minority situation, meaning that it doesn't control the majority of seats at the House of Commons. Using this to our advantage, we are talking to government. We're doing some lobbying with these facts, but we're also raising awareness and also raising the level of knowledge, but also making sure that the population will be reacting and will be expressing their concern with what's happening. And this is why all these projects are actually not moving, or the project of deep integration is not moving as fast as was expected by our own business organizations.
How about a group in the U.S. or two or Mexico?
Well, there are groups, actually, and I could probably state a few ones, but I'm not sure at what level they're at right now. However, there is a tri-national organization, regrouping organizations from Mexico, the United States, and Canada, which are working specifically on this type of question, and it's called Common Frontiers. And those organizations are looking at deep integration. They are also looking at issues such as the Free Trade Area of the Americas, the FTA, and trying to develop a common response to this and a common strategy that will be effective in all three countries at the same time. So Common Frontiers is really the most successful and the most effective coalition on these issues.
Okay, and we're just going to have to leave it there. My guest this morning has been Guy Caron, campaigner with the Council of Canadians in Ottawa. We've been discussing deep integration of North America. You can find out more about this topic on their website at www.canadians.org. And there's also links to their site as well as a whole bunch of information regarding deep integration at the People Rise Up website, kboo.fm. Thank you very much for being on the program once again, Guy.
It's my pleasure, Andrew.
All right, take care.
Bye.
And off he goes. And again, Canadians.org, People Rise Up website, kboo.fm. I should mention that Maude Barlow, the head of the Council of Canadians, has a brand new book out called Too Close for Comfort, Canadians' Future Within Fortress North America, which discusses in a lot of detail these topics and others. Thank you very much for listening to the program. If you have any comments or questions about anything you heard, you can send email to me at kboo@riseup.net. Once again, thank you very much for listening.